Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 52nd Hewlett-Packard's Lab podcast from Research to Reality. This time, I have a great honor and pleasure to host Scott Schaefer. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Dan, good to see you.
You are the VP of Server Advanced Development, is that right?
Indeed I am.
Welcome. So Scott, you are one of the examples of the leadership in Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. Have you ever thought in your, as you were growing up, that you will one day become the VP of our big company?
I would say, careers go all kinds of different ways, right? So certainly no, when you graduate from college, you don't know where you're gonna go. But I didn't have any particular plan or goal for it at all, that's for sure.
So when did you start thinking about leadership?
I would say there was a time when I graduated as a software developer, mm-hmm. and so I did a bunch of that, and you kind of move up a little bit through the technical ranks, and you start to be an architect or today what I call like a master level engineer, and you're helping design, and you start to help making decisions on what should happen, and at some point you start to say, well, I think I can make more of a difference in leadership than purely technical, and so I decided to make that jump about that time.
And somewhere I heard that companies are like snowflakes, not two are the same. You, before HP, you worked for EMC. Can you draw some comparisons in terms of culture, leadership, anything?
Yeah, big time. EMC was quite a bit different because I would say it was a very sales-oriented culture, mm-hmm. in that there's some good things and bad things about that. I'd say some of the good things is that everybody is very, very focused on the customer, very focused on getting the deals. Didn't matter where you were in the organization, you are really oriented towards, let's make sure that customers are happy and that we're helping the sales team win deals and helping that next quarter. It was very, very focused. And so there's a little bit of a downside to that. I'd say sometimes it can be kind of cutthroat. That is the norm in a sales organization. Mm-hmm. And so HPE is, I would say, a little friendlier, a little better work-life balance than there. But at the same time, we can be, I'm not saying we're not focused on customer because we, mm-hmm. we care very much. We want to be. But I think we take a little bit longer view as well. We look and say, okay, how can this be operated over 5 years or 10 years? Where sometimes I think if it's purely sales oriented, you get narrowed up on the quarter.
So that means we're also focused on technology and technology leadership. So how does it reflect your technical leaders in your organization? How do they make a difference?
Yeah, the thing that I push all the time is that you have to have ideas before you can have innovation. I know that sounds obvious, but you have to, the way I kind of equate it with them is that for every 10 ideas that you have or that someone has, one of those ideas is worth pursuing a little bit and doing like a proof of concept, mm-hmm. and figuring it out, right? And of every 10 proof of concepts you do, one of those makes it to the product, the way I kind of look at it. And so if you back that up, you have to have 100 ideas before you have one thing make the product. And you have 99 things that don't make it. But if you don't collect those ideas, if you don't cause that conversation, if you don't cause that discussion within the technical community, you don't create the 100 ideas. You don't get the one that turns into product.
Plus these 99 probably support that one, make it stronger, better, et cetera.
What I try to tell folks is that you should always be learning, whether you learn from the you should learn something from the failures. I say failures is a little strong. It's that you investigated something and it didn't turn into product. That doesn't mean it's a failure if you learn something from it. Mm-hmm. So I really encourage my teams, and we create forums for people to bring forward and share their learnings, even when the thing is not something we're going to move forward with or it isn't a wild success.
So can you give some examples that are close to your heart? It could be any past or current effort.
Oh, absolutely. So, we have one of the folks, and he's been working on, we spent some time working on a possible solution we were going to do involving DPUs. Mm-hmm. And we spent a lot of time working on it. And ultimately, we got to the conclusion when we looked at innovation ideas, we looked at the market, we looked at the revenue and margin profile, the whole thing. Ultimately, we decided not to do it, but we learned so much along the way. and enabled us to say, okay, now we know what the market is around GPUs. We know what's going on in all of our all of the potential partners that we can work with, whether mm-hmm. it's AMD, Pensando, or NVIDIA, or Intel. We know that really intimately, and so we're in a great position to be able to help advise customers.
So many times, it's much more important to decide what you're not going to do than what you are going to do.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm glad you mentioned partners. How does it work? How do you collaborate with them? We have many partners. How do you select the most important ones? How do you work with them? How you exchange ideas? What kind of relationship do you build?
Yeah, it depends on what kind of partner that you're talking to, because we have all kinds of different, I mean, I feel like different kinds, right? Microsoft and VMware are partners of ours, mm-hmm. but they're not suppliers, and so therefore they're not, you know, they're not listening to our agenda. They're doing their own agenda, mm-hmm. and we have to find that mutual time point in their priorities that match our priorities. I remember sitting down with the chief executive for Red Hat back when it was before it was acquired by IBM, and we just went through the give me your top three priorities for the year. What are they? Mm-hmm. And I said, let me share you with what HPEs are. Oh, look, these two, one on each side, they are consistent with one another. Mm-hmm. All right, we have a strategic reason to have a relationship and move it forward. If you can't find that, then you're probably not more than just a transactional partner. Mm. Now, there are other partners that are suppliers. You know, they are, I think of the folks like the Broadcoms and the Marvells and even AMD and Intel to some degree, right? They're all suppliers to us. Some of those suppliers are taking their cues from us and looking for us to give them direction mm-hmm. and give them the priorities, and some of them definitely are not. And so again, you have to look and see what are they up to, where can we align, and then how do we go to market together, or how do we build a product together?
And then that relationship partner to us is very similar, although inverted, with our customers.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And in many ways, we are partnering to our customers with the best ones.
I hope so, right? Yeah, that's really important to us, right? We just have these advisory boards mm-hmm. that we try to elevate those customers so it isn't just a transactional to them, right? They mm-hmm. see us as a technology, a partner for them who are giving them advice, helping them come up with solutions, you know, mutually working together on how we can develop solutions. And that's just a great relationship, right? Because they get something that they need, they're going to be successful. We get a whole bunch of learnings, and then we can take those to other customers in the market. Mm-hmm.
I know that you just happen to be extremely interested, like many others in industry nowadays, in sustainability. Can you tell us what your approach is? How are we going to win this extremely important game?
Well, you know, when you think about sustainability, that's a big topic first, right? And so what we've done is we've kind of broken the problem down a little bit into what I think of our sustainability offerings, things that we are going to take to our customers and mm-hmm. that they're interested in buying, and they absolutely are. That's one of the reasons that makes this space so exciting, is that many customers are now really interested in sustainability in terms of lowering their carbon footprint and making their operations better, right, and cleaner. And so we want to make sure HPE has offerings in that space to help our customers, mm-hmm. but we also want to improve ourselves. We need to make Hewlett Packard Enterprise the greenest company, GreenLake name notwithstanding. We need to make HPE the one of the greenest customers, or greenest companies. And so improving ourselves is absolutely critically part of this as well. Things that, you know, ultimately will show up at the customer is just we can deliver them a solution or a product with zero embedded carbon, but will take a lot of work for us to get there. And so when you break those problems up in two, that's when I get, like, to me, that's really exciting. I love both sides of that. I love mm-hmm. the trying to figure out what kind of offerings we want to have, but I also really enjoy figuring out how we're going to do things differently to build products and solutions internally, to build them in a way using clean energy, or to build them mm-hmm. a way with the minimum embedded carbon.
Whoever came up with the name Green Lake was pretty visionary.
It turns out, right?
Yeah. One of the most exciting technologies inside of sustainability are digital twins. I heard you talking with a lot of passion about it. Why is it so? I know they're a sexy topic, but why were you so excited about it?
Yeah, we were on that conversation. I was really trying to understand it. I was really mm-hmm. trying to understand what was different about that than other simulation technologies, right? Why would you say digital twin is it just the next evolution of simulation?
Yep.
Is it really something innovatively different? Is there really some applicability to spaces that perhaps we haven't thought of that you haven't simulated in the past? So that's what had me curious about it, because I was really trying to learn.
Yeah. Speaking of twins and individuals, our people are our largest asset. How do you nurture your people, your employees?
Well, I wish there were just one simple answer. Well, you just do this and it all, of course, because everybody's different. And so I think that's the key. I think you have to understand what motivates each individual so that you can help them get the benefit or the value of their career, get the benefit of their of what they're trying to accomplish. And so, to me, the key is understanding what each individual is trying to do and then help them achieve that. Of course, it has to be aligned to the company's goals. It's not just altruistic, but each individual is key. So talking to them, understanding what their goals are, that matters a lot. But I also really like making sure that our folks have the time and the room to learn. Whether it's because you are building a proof of concept and you're learning from it, you're investigating something, you're taking that training class, you're participating in a leadership program, whatever it is, I really think it's important to give people time. Actually, tell them it's okay. Take the day. Take a day every week and work on this thing and work on yourself. Give them time to do that. Without that, people tend not to.
Yeah. So you are one of the unique leaders in our company who was emphasizing open source. Why was it so? It's obvious now, but 10 years ago or more, you were one of the few who were doing so. Why? How did you come to that importance such early?
I guess it was because, again, my background was writing software and developing it, and I saw that there was an opportunity to just get a lot of leverage from open source. Mm-hmm. I'm not one of those leaders that thinks that open sourcing our own stuff just for the doing it has any value. I actually don't think it does most of the time. Now, if you can build a community around it and you can get leverage from it, then it has value. But that takes a lot of hard work. And I point out that a lot of people aren't interested in doing that hard work. They just want to open source something and see magic, right? Yep. It's like, no, that's not what happens. So the reason I like it is the opportunity to get leverage from it. They're just, the more smarter people looking at software, the better it is. It's just the way it's always been.
Well, it's almost the same ratio, 1 out of 10. You throw out 10, but those that you nurture, few of those are becoming successful.
Yeah, that's right.
Open source nowadays plays the role of standards, almost, in some ways. Mm-hmm. Is there still role for traditional standards?
Oh, completely.
World?
But the reason it's interesting you mentioned that. To me, open source is almost, it becomes a de facto standard in a lot of cases, right? There's always been de facto standards in our industry, and that's not a problem. But traditional standards, working with standards bodies, completely, absolutely continues to have a role. We were just talking at lunch with some people today about CXL. Yeah. We were talking about PCI. We were talking about JEDEC. We were talking about these standards exist because we want to create an opportunity for companies to interoperate with one another. Mm-hmm. So to me, there's definitely important room there where we want to continue to have that interoperability. If you want to create a marketplace for multiple companies to participate, you have to have standards.
Yeah. We have also spoken about documenting innovation and inventions, and they could be documented either as patents or publications. How much do you think they are important?
Well, clearly having a strong intellectual property catalog at Hewlett Packard Enterprise is important. I really like when we can defend ourselves from other companies who think, I'm going to sue you over something, right? I really like that we can use our portfolio to defend ourselves. So from that standpoint, I think it's really good. I think it can actually be a negative sometimes. I think software patents in general sometimes have not been great for the industry, locking up certain things that are software are just a little strange to me. It's not the same. An algorithm, you're not supposed to be able to patent that, but somehow, people act like they do and they have software patents. So some of it's bad, but I'd say by and large for HPE, it's been really good. And then every once in a while, we get one that just is, in fact, used everywhere. And we are able to collect some royalty revenue from it. So that's never a bad thing.
What about papers, publishing conferences, journals, or even documents, white papers?
Yeah, the thing about, I would say, like publishing and papers, that's incredibly valuable for helping advance the state of the art. Especially when you're working with folks in academia, like I know you do. I really like that. I like that we're able to do that to kind of advance that state of the art, to use that research to move it forward and to encourage new research into new areas. So I consider those papers very important for that reason. You know, white papers are a little different. A lot of times those are designed to really a sort of almost like extension of our customer communications, where we're showing you how to do something or we're explaining our perspective on it. And so I think those are a little bit different. I don't tend to think of those exactly in the same space because I think they have just a completely different purpose.
Okay. Our company is well known for investment in humanity in general. What kind of, other than sustainability, what other aspects do you think your organization is doing or Hall of HP that you're impressed with?
Well, I'm really proud of HPE's DEI efforts in general, mm-hmm. of, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion, because I really believe in it. I believe that I've seen it. I've seen teams that come together that had very similar backgrounds. They went to the same upper middle class white American schools and then the same colleges. They approach problems the same way. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that. But when you get people with a really diverse set of backgrounds, they didn't grow up that way, they approach problems differently. They come up with solutions that the first group doesn't. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need most of the time, right? We need different ideas, different approaches to problem solving. And I've just seen it. I've just seen people who come at the problem with a different viewpoint because they had a different experience or they've grown up differently. It just has mattered. And so for me, I think that's an awesome part of HPE, that we really celebrate it, we promote it, and we say we want that because I think it just makes us better.
Very nice. You spend a lot of time and effort in work. What else do you do? Is there any time of the day, week, month, year that you can put into something else?
Sure, yeah. I really enjoy gardening in terms of planting. Really, I don't like have like not a vegetable garden. I haven't done that, but really just sort of, you know, maintaining the plants and picking good choices and putting them in and hopefully they survive. And so I enjoy that and creating a good looking landscape. So that's something that interests me. And then I do a lot of woodworking. A lot of tools. I have a lot of tools. I don't do enough woodworking, but I have a lot of tools to potentially do it. Yeah. So I kind of collect those tools. I always feel like having the right tool for the job is so important. And then I still really enjoy computer gaming. I'm online, you know, computer gaming with groups of friends. Maybe not every night, but many nights a week. Because it's not only is it fun, but it's a really interesting social aspect where you're talking to friends now online that maybe don't even live in the same city anymore, but you still maintain those relationships.
Stay connected. Speaking of city, you work and live in Houston. Today actually, we're in Orlando, Florida, and then you've been visiting us in California. How do you draw parallels? How is life in Texas?
And
where did you grow up, by the way?
I was born in St. Louis, Missouri, and then at 7 years old, moved to Texas and kind of been there, really. I spent a few years up in Boston when I worked for EMC, so got to be around. I'd say one of the things I like about Texas is there is a high degree, people are just friendly. They're willing to say howdy and be friendly to you. I feel like that is something that's pretty nice. And then I can't help but point out, I mean, the economic situation in Texas has been fantastic. It has been growing like crazy. It was very big contrast for me living in Massachusetts, where they were kind of shrinking. And that is just puts a lot of pressure on all of everything in government and services and people, you know, and they're declining a little bit. That's not fun. Being in an area that's enjoyed growth for many years, it's quite fun from that perspective, because there's always that kind of thing going on, new businesses starting and growth and new buildings and things going in. And so I kind of always have liked that. So that's a little bit different in Texas. I'd also say that there's plenty of strong technology leadership in all kinds of areas. And Texas has lots of good technology leadership. I think we're seeing some big growth in Austin now, where some of the technology companies are actually relocating there. And we're starting to see that those areas grow for sure.
Also some good vegan food in Texas.
Totally, right, yeah, absolutely. You know, Houston, I'd say, is not really a technology hotbed per se. It has a much stronger kind of oil and gas presence and has, but most companies, you know, oil and gas is no exception, have a heavy investment in technology. And so that's going on in Houston, just like every place else.
I usually end up this podcast asking about books, but after, you know, your work, gardening, woodwork, games? Do you ever have time to take a look at some book? What's the one that you read last?
The one that I read last, I highly, highly recommend. It's called Thinking Fast and Slow. I heard somebody internally had recommended it, right? So it was on my list. And then I was listening to a podcast with a psychologist, and this psychologist said that he thought that this book was the most important book written in the 21st century so far. And that had me saying, okay, I got to go read that, right? What could that be about? And so it turns out that it is a really interesting perspective from one psychologist's study of humans and how our brain works over many years, and little interesting things that he's learned, that he learned along the way about how our brain processes information. And it, I found it to be very inspiring and incredibly thought-provoking. I have not stopped thinking about that book since I finished it.
I can definitely use some of this thinking slow. Thank you very much. It was great talking to you.
Awesome. Thanks. Thanks for having me. We'll be right back.